Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and highly unlikely? Join us twice a month on a journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 248, The Grand Erewhon Palace. Read by Mitchell Two. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, you might want to question your unusual luck. Upon entering the oversized lobby, I was immediately struck by the columns. Their bases were carved to look like giant dragon or fish heads. I couldn't decide which. Morphing into gold leaf scales, the exotic bases led to 10-story-high columns with fin-like capitals at the top. They supported a gold-inlaid marble lintel, and, resting on that, was a glass dome which acted like a prism, splitting the tropical midday sun into rainbows of colored light. I did my best not to stop and gawk like a peasant awed by the splendor of a royal palace. However, that was exactly how I felt. The overall effect was to make me feel a bit grubby, despite my brand new designer vacation wardrobe, which had put a substantial dent in my credit card. It was the kind of place only the richest people in the world get to experience, and I felt fortunate to have won the opportunity to be there. The contest was one of those online promotions. Sign up now and you'll be automatically entered in our dream vacation draw. I never expected to win anything until a few days ago. I'm the kind of person who wouldn't win the door prize even if I was the only one in the room. So, when I received the message that I was a winner, at first, I assumed there had been a mistake or that it was some sort of scam. However, the airfare was valid, the hotel confirmed my reservation, and the bank told me the debit card I had been sent for expenses was real, as long as I used it during the 10 days of the trip. So, I packed my bags and headed to the airport without asking too many questions, which might have been a good idea, since nothing is truly free. Next thing I know, I'm standing in this stunningly opulent lobby, rubbing elbows for 10 days with the world's wealthiest people who are giving me odd looks. Did my overpriced, off-the-rack clothes mark me for what I was? A lowly contest winner from the underclass, polluting their rarefied playground. I put the thought out of my mind and approached the front desk. The clerk, a rather tall man, dressed in a gold blazer with the resort's crest on one lapel, greeted me with a well-practiced smile. "Welcome to the Grand Erewhon Palace, Mr. Sorensen." Hearing the resort's name, I realized I had only remembered the Grand and Palace part, not Erewhon. The word was only vaguely familiar, and it didn't really seem to belong in the name of a hotel, like Shangri-La, or Paradise, or Eden. However, why did I even care? The place was absolutely over-the-top luxurious. But I made a mental note to look up the name next time I got online. For some reason, it resonated in my memory. Was it the name of a fictional place in a book like Shangri-La? Possibly, but I wasn't sure. "How do you know who I am?" I asked, suspecting my distracted look and off-the-rack clothes had given me away. "We've been expecting you," he shrugged, holding up a printout with my picture, my name, and grand prize winner written across the bottom. "We have a special arrangement for prize winners," the front desk clerk added, looking me up and down with a critical eye. "Which includes an in-house stylist, sir." He pushed a printed sheet toward me. "Please sign this, sir. I'll also need an imprint of your winner's debit card." I dug the card out of my wallet and held it up, and he scanned it with a reader. Really, I didn't care. It wasn't my money. I was truly going to enjoy myself, and to heck with what it cost. I signed the sheet and pushed it back across the counter. The clerk picked it up as if it carried some disease and dropped it into a slot. As part of our special arrangement for winners, you have full access to our exclusive fantasy amusement park. I'm sure the guy winked. Your room is on the fifth floor, with direct access to it through your patio. The hallway door is only for checking in and out, as well as room service, so please use the patio door to access your room and the park, he emphasized. I'm confident you will find your stay here a memorable experience. In fact, most winners don't want to leave. He smiled insincerely and motioned for a bellhop. Mr. Sorensen will be staying in the butler room on the fifth floor. The bellhop, who had been waiting beside the desk, picked up my bag and led me through the ornate lobby to a bank of elevators. The door on the first one obediently opened, and we walked in. Fifth floor, the bellhop requested. The doors slid shut, and we began to rise. Distracted by the Bosch-like murals of medieval angels lining the elevator, I was surprised when we suddenly stopped and the door opened again. This way, sir, the bellhop encouraged, and we exited into a hallway with a vaulted roof covered in brightly painted murals of mythical, exotic sea creatures. There was a sense we were standing at the bottom of the ocean thanks to the murals, which made the ceiling seem as if it were made of glass. It's intended to make you feel like you have entered another place in time. Our guests appreciate how the outside world feels so far away in here. The bellhop noted, then turned away and started walking. Our footsteps echoed off the marble floor, inlaid with a coral pattern. We passed lounges and bars, all decorated in an undersea theme, and many, many doors. More doors than I thought possible, given the size of the hotel from the outside. I must admit, I was too busy considering how that could be possible to note the path the bellhop took to get to my room. It was something I would come to regret later. The bellhop finally stopped in front of an impressive wood door with an intricate gold plaque proclaiming it to be the butler room. "Here we are, sir," he said, opening the door and placing my luggage inside. He then waited, left arm held out, exposing a rather large watch. I stared at the watch, not understanding. "Ahem," he cleared his throat. "Just tap the watch with your card, sir." I did what he asked, and an insanely large number appeared on the thing's display, which was apparently the size of the tip I had just given him. "Is there a way to set the amount?" I asked. Without smiling, he turned and left. I hoped they had put enough on the card. It was going to get very, very expensive here. I sighed and looked around the room. Like the rest of the hotel, it was overdone with ornate gold trim and hand-painted murals. A sliding glass door led out to what should have been a balcony. Instead, it led to a patio and lush tropical gardens. It felt like I was on the ground floor, but I knew for certain we had gone up. I decided that anything was possible with enough money and marveled at the engineering behind such an architectural feat. Feeling jet-lagged from the long flight, I decided I needed some exercise. A run along the hotel's exclusive 3 kilometers of beach came to mind. I had seen pictures of it on the hotel's website. So I unpacked, found my running gear, dressed, and exited my room through the patio doors, which hissed closed behind me when I left. The tropical garden was larger than I expected. In fact, it was so large I couldn't see the other side. I stepped out onto a path, dodging a kid in a bathing suit carrying an elaborate inflatable beach toy which looked like a raccoon. The thing somehow twisted around, and for a brief moment, I thought I could see cartoony white teeth grinning back at me. But when I recovered and looked again, its mouth was just a simple dark line on its plastic skin. The beach toy and the kid disappeared around a bend in the path. I assumed both were headed to the beach. My assumption was confirmed when I rounded the corner and found an information kiosk half covered in flowering vines, displaying a pictograph of a wave and palm tree. An arrow pointed in the direction the little girl had gone. I stepped back around the corner to get my bearings and found a row of identical patios. I cursed myself for not having kept track of which one was mine. Now I'd have to come back through the hall when I finished my run. Maybe I could get a towel at the beach. Based on the reaction to my non-haute couture presence in the lobby and the front desk clerk's comment about restricted use of the hall, I doubted the hotel would appreciate drops of sweat on their pristine marble floors. But what could they do? Charge my winner's card to clean it up? I chuckled. Another few minutes of walking took me through the garden to an interior mall full of shops, bars, and crowds of people, or, more precisely, crowds of people who looked like they were all going to a costume party. Princesses and kings in gold lamé and purple robes, upright zebras and unicorn-headed centaurs walked side by side in the mall's crowded central plaza. There were elves and bears and every manner of mythical creature milling leisurely along the storefronts, occasionally stopping to look at something in a window. But no one had mentioned a costume party to me. Feeling conspicuously out of place, I tried to keep to the edge of the garden while looking for another kiosk to point me in the direction of the beach. Then I spotted the head of the inflatable raccoon weaving through the throngs toward an escalator on the far side of the mall. Deciding I didn't care what this crowd would think of a slightly overweight man in cheap exercise gear momentarily crashing their party, I quickly left the shadows to follow. One of the partygoers with an elephant head mounted to a robot costume stepped into my path, stared at me for a moment, then laughed and moved out of my way. I had to admit, the detail on the costumes were amazing as the crowd seemed to part to let me pass. They all looked so real, but these were among the wealthiest people in the world, I reminded myself, so of course they could afford to hire the best costume designers and makeup artists. As I approached the escalator, I noticed two things. The crowd had drifted over to a giant video screen I had overlooked before, and what I thought was an escalator turned out to be an inflatable stairway, like you'd see at a kid's party, leading into a bouncy castle. The little girl was bouncing down the stairs with her distinctive beach toy. Feeling a bit foolish, I'm not one of those people who likes to draw attention to themselves, I gingerly tested the stairs. But instead of finding a soft, rubbery surface, my foot seemed to sink into nothing, and I fell forward, instinctively twisting at the last second so I wouldn't do a faceplant. On my way down, I caught a quick glance of the large screen, which had the numbers 5-1, or something, superimposed over a shot of the festivities. Some of the partygoers seemed to be cheering and laughing, and I got the feeling it was about my unfortunate mishap. Then, without warning, the stairs swept me away like some demonic water slide. A few seconds later, it spilled me out onto a slick marble surface. I made a note to complain to the hotel. By accident, I had obviously ended up literally tripping onto some weird amusement park ride, which, at the moment, I did not find amusing at all. They really needed better signage. The space I had ended up in turned out to be a mezzanine. Somehow, the weird stair thing had changed directions, taking the girl down and me up. From below, the sounds of a party were drifting up. I got up and walked over to the rail and looked down. An MC was now on the giant video screen, taunting the crowd into excitement.
Come on, folks, we're just getting started and it already looks like one of the best in months.
The noise of the crowd drowned out what the MC was saying when the numbers at the top of the screen changed to 7-1. Although fascinated by the scene below, I really needed to get outside to clear my jet lag away. There was the ding of an elevator behind me, and I swung around. A panel on the heavily decorated wall had slipped open, revealing an elevator like the one I had taken up from the lobby. Encouraged this would get me down to the ground floor and the beach, I entered. The door immediately slid shut, and I realized there were no controls. Panic swept over me until I remembered how the bellhop had used voice commands. "Ground floor," I requested confidently, but nothing happened. "Lobby?" I tried next, starting to get concerned again. I didn't like the thought of being trapped in a small space. "First floor?" I tried experimentally. Sweat began to drip down my back as I imagined the walls closing in. "Open," I commanded in desperation. Finally, the thing jolted into motion, which way I couldn't tell, until I noticed the horizontal lines of the elevator shaft beyond the glass window moving down. It was going up, again. Why could I only go up? You wouldn't expect to find a broken elevator in a place like this. The elevator jerked to a sudden stop, its door opened, and green light poured in. A creature which looked like another raccoon entered, and the door closed before I could get out.
"Going up,"
it said to the elevator, which this time promptly obeyed. The thing stood about chest high, which led me to suspect there was a child hidden under its very convincing fur. "Raccoons seem to be a bit of a theme today," I muttered, unfortunately loud enough for it to hear. The raccoon glared at me.
"I can assure you there is only one of me here," it said hotly.
"Are you going to the party in the mall?" I ventured, trying to change the subject.
"What party?"
the raccoon replied, scratching under one armpit with a claw-shaped hand. Again, I was blown away by the detail of the outfit. I had never seen anything so realistic before. "I can imagine that outfit must get itchy after a while," I said, then added, "The party on the fifth floor, are you going to it? I'm totally impressed by your costume." The raccoon looked down at itself, seemingly amused.
"Costume? A party? Oh, you mean the casino," it said. Big game today, lots of betting. There will be lots of betting on today's game."
It looked me up and down critically.
"I hear the odds against are quite high, and now I understand why. However, you can't bet until you've been here a while, and you certainly can't bet while you are in the outcome. House rules."
I'm not interested in gambling on some silly sports event," I explained. "I'm just looking for the beach."
Right, yes, the way you're dressed, of course you are. It's not easy to get there from here. Not easy at all, you know. Very hot indeed. Are you quite sure you want to go there? If I were you, I'd just stay in your room. It would disappoint, but there'll be another later today to play."
"You're not making a lot of sense," I said, starting to get annoyed that a kid in a raccoon costume was questioning where I wanted to go. "I've been trying to get to the ground floor, but nothing is taking me there. I know I can't get to the beach from an upper floor. I'd have to jump, and that's ridiculous."
"Interesting," the raccoon noted, then started mumbling to itself. "Must make a note, yeah, considering jumping changes the odds a lot."
I interrupted. "You wouldn't know how I could get to the main floor, would you?"
"Possibly," the costume kid hedged. "But not from here. Oh no, not from here at all. You'll need to go to the other end of the resort. That's where it all connects to the outside."
I wanted to point out having only one exit to the ground floor was a fire hazard, but decided I should wait until I found a hotel employee. I was starting to compose a rate my trip rant in my head when the raccoon interrupted my thoughts.
"Not easy to get there, you know,"
it repeated, checking something on a data pad which I hadn't noticed it carrying before.
"But I've got time, I'll show you."
"Thanks," I said. "I wouldn't want to inconvenience you."
No problem at all. My name is Tewit Rabby,"
the raccoon said. "That's an unusual name," I noted. "Aren't you hot in that costume? You should at least take the head off." Tewit looked taken back at my suggestion.
"I will not take my head off for you or anyone else," Tewit said, sounding offended.
I was beginning to suspect I wasn't dealing with a kid. "I didn't mean you should literally take your head off," I apologized. The elevator stopped and the door opened. This time, soft purple light spilled in. Tawit stepped out and turned to me.
Well, what did you mean then? Oh, never mind. Are you coming or are you going to stand in that elevator all day? It only goes one direction, up.
But I was going to suggest that an elevator which only went up was an impossibility. However, Tawit had already begun to walk away. I jumped out of the elevator just as its door started to close and found myself standing in a hall painted purple, emerald, and blue. Shiny small turquoise tiles covered the floor and ceiling, and soft, nondescript muzak echoed through the air. Tawit nodded and waved me forward.
Good choice, follow me.
We started walking down what I initially thought was a short hallway with a mirror at the end, which created one of those infinite regression effects that appears to go on forever. However, we never reached the end and kept walking past where I swore the mirror should have been. The hall just continued on and on. After passing what looked like the 50th identical door, I finally asked, "How long is this hallway anyway? Are we just going in circles or something?"
"You must be patient. It takes time to pass through. The Hall of Dreams will end when it needs to end,"
Tawit explained. "That's very cryptic of you," I complained. "However, you seem to know a lot about this place. Do you work here or something?" The raccoon stopped and stared at me.
"And no, I don't work. I am simply here. There are more of us, all the time. Erwan is a place where you come to be."
I think that tagline is supposed to say, "Erwan is a place to experience all you can be," I corrected. I read something like that on the website, but I never take marketing mumbo-jumbo seriously. What I don't get is all the costumes. Tawit shook its head, as if I had missed the point or something.
"You'll see," the raccoon said, then started moving again.
We passed so many identical doors and columns that I lost track of time and began to feel hungry. How long had we been walking? As if the hotel somehow knew what I wanted, between the next set of sparkly columns, there was a lounge with a buffet. A couple of guests in hobbit, elf, and troll costumes were intently watching screens embedded in their tables and debating in a language I didn't understand. They ignored us as we walked in and headed to the food bar. "This is weird," I whispered to Tawit. "It feels like Comic-Con or something." The raccoon gave me a questioning look. I sighed. "Is everyone dressed up today?"
"No, formal night is on Fridays," Tawit said, motioning for me to grab a plate and load up.
The buffet had all my favorites, and I soon found myself eating way too much, and my desire for a run proportionally reduced with every bite I didn't need. "I think I'll just go for a walk on the beach instead," I proclaimed, finally putting down my fork. "But I'll still need to get down to the lobby." Tawit nodded, then motioned for me to get up. For a second, everyone in the lounge seemed to be watching. When I looked, they quickly went back to monitoring their screens. A few laughed, others cursed. "What's with them?" I asked.
"The odds must have just changed again," Tawit explained.
"Odds of what?"
"It's just a game,"
Tawit said, as if that explained everything. When we got out into the passage, everything was different. The infinite regression hall had gone, replaced by a ramp, which, because of the architecture and recent experiences, was impossible to tell if it was going up or down. "What happened to the long hall?" I asked.
"It must have finished,"
Tawit shrugged, then started up or down the ramp. After a minute, I turned around and saw that the lounge was gone. Where it had been was now a wall covered by another Bosch mural of peasants gorging themselves at some hellish medieval feast. Soon, it appeared we were coming to a set of glass doors with daylight beyond. "Finally," I thought, "we've made it to the lobby." We burst through the doors out into a sun-drenched space. I looked up and found myself staring at blue sky. Relief washed through me until I realized we were on the roof, which had been turned into a garden. The odd HVAC unit popped out over top of the potted palm trees. Yet more costumed people were lounging about, doing their best to ignore us. "I thought we were headed to the lobby," I complained.
"This is the way out," Tewitt insisted. "Follow, you'll see."
The raccoon started to weave through the lounge chairs and potted plants. With a sigh of resignation, I followed. Sooner or later, I was sure I would come across an exit to get outside of the building. Eventually, we came to the end of the roof, where a row of fake onion-domed turrets were spaced out along the edge. Tewitt headed for the tallest one. I seemed to recall it being in the center of the building above the main entrance. From the outside, the resort had looked like an ancient Arabian palace. Tewitt skidded to a stop and looked over a low rail, which presumably was there to keep people from falling off. However, anyone over 4 feet high could easily tumble over if they leaned out too far. Needless to say, I wasn't impressed with the resort's lack of concern around safety. It was then that I noticed the exit sign attached to the rail with an arrow pointing down.
"See, here it is, the exit," Tewitt proudly proclaimed.
"This is a sick joke," I said, looking over, careful not to lean out too far. It was a sheer drop. There was no ladder or rope or anything. 10 stories below, a marching band, looking like toy soldiers, was progressing up the cobblestone drive to the large portico covering the hotel entrance. I didn't recognize the song they were playing. However, behind them was a limousine, the same one which had taken me from the airport to the hotel. Tewitt pulled out its data pad again from some hidden pouch in its fur and read something on its screen.
"Yeah, this is good. This is really good," Tewitt chuckled. "The odds have gone up. I've never seen them this high in Erewhon before."
Erewhon, there was something about that name that had been bothering me since the first time I heard it. Then the answer rushed at me like a bolt of lightning. Flip the word around, leaving the W and H in their current order, and Erewhon became nowhere. "Nowhere," I blurted out. "Erewhon is an anagram for nowhere." With another flash of realization, I added, "And your name is an anagram too, for White Rabbit. Erewhon is a fictional place in a 19th century novel, and White Rabbit is a fictional character in—"
Yeah, you finally got it. You are nowhere in the physical world,"
Tewitt interrupted, and smiled slyly.
"Good thing I bet the long odds today. The smart money was sure you'd never figure it out. And look, you are already beginning to find your true form."
The raccoon nodded at my feet.
"I was a bit of a con artist in my day. I tricked my way in here to steal from the guests. I was quite obsessed about it. So it makes sense that I became a raccoon. You don't get a choice in the matter, you know. You become what you want most of the time."
I looked down in horror as one runner disappeared and my foot morphed into a big toe with a nail. A small leathery one grew in beside it. My other foot was well on its way to looking the same.
"Two toes? Those are ostrich feet," Tewitt noted admiringly. "Don't look so surprised. All you wanted to do when we went through the Hall of Dreams was go to the beach and run. So you'll be fast on the sand once your transformation is complete. Then you can run all you want."
I don't understand."
"You can always leave and go back to who you were,"
Tewitt nodded over the edge.
"Some do, although the odds are on you staying. You'd certainly make a few of us big winners if you take the exit. Personally, I bet you'd stay. Not much of a return, but a safe bet nonetheless."
The raccoon smiled.
"You don't seem like the type."
"It's 10 stories down," I protested.
"There's a landing zone," Tewitt pointed out.
I leaned over the rail and noticed a tiny circle of bubbling water beside the portico.
"That pond is more than adequately deep," Tewitt noted casually. "They didn't want to make this too easy. You really have to want to go back. The bubbles soften the impact. Any decent cliff diver could make it."
The raccoon laughed and added,
"Like I said, you don't seem like the type."
Below, the marching band had passed through the portico, and the limousine pulled up and stopped. A woman got out, dressed in new, off-the-rack vacation clothes. Another winner, I realized in horror, and yelled, "Don't go in! It's a trap!" I waved frantically with both arms. The woman looked up and waved back, then walked toward the front doors. "You're going to lose your bet," I said before I got up on the rail. Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find The Second Floor. Join hosts Omid and Kenny as they discuss how to survive, thrive, and keep the good vibes flowing in life, health, and business. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by the Edmonton Community Foundation. The Edmonton Community Foundation. Give, grow, transform. The foundation acts as a bridge between donors and charities to create a strong, vibrant community for generations to come. You can start an endowment fund yourself or with a group. Once it reaches $10,000, it can start distributing funds. The Edmonton Community Foundation connects you to the resources you need. It helps donors make the best decision for their funds. Students can find the grants that help them succeed. Charities are able to fund their latest projects. The foundation builds relationships that strengthen the Edmonton community. Learn more at ecfoundation.org. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Alberta Blue Cross. Alberta Blue Cross understands that running a small business is tough, and they understand that business owners in Alberta are busy. Let Alberta Blue Cross give you peace of mind with a group benefit plan. They offer health, dental, life, and disability coverage for your employees. Alberta Blue Cross group benefit plans are easy to manage anywhere, anytime, and on any device, making it easy for you and your employees to access. To learn more and explore your options, head to ab.bluecross.ca. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio production and editing by Makeshift Studios. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com. or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.